The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
President Biden is expected to make an announcement today on federal student loan relief. Reports say that the president will take steps to forgive up to $10,000 in federal student loan debt for borrowers making less than $125,000 a year. Loan payments that were paused more than 2 years as part of a pandemic-era relief policy were scheduled to resume at the end of this month. More than 40 million Americans currently hold debt tied to their education, and the total amount of student loan debt exceeds $1.7 trillion. Critics warn that canceling debt could make inflation even worse. In fact, guys, I saw a report earlier this morning that said more than 80% of Republicans think it will make inflation worse, and more than 40% of Democrats think the same thing. I think maybe the bigger issue is it doesn't hold any of these schools to account, where you have seen tuition prices outpace inflation for decades at this point.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that is that's something else. I mean, in some respects, what a blessing it'll be to a lot of people, right, to have their student loans, at least $10,000 of those federal loans, eradicated, right? A lot of people are saying, wait a minute, I labored to get mine done. I made lots of sacrifices to make sure maybe my kids didn't need to have those loans, or you know, to mitigate what the burden they'd have to bear. I hope Democrats and Republicans are wrong. I hope, you know, it's not going to add to the fire that's already burning, the inflation. I hope this is not more kindling to that. A lot of experts think that this is not going to help. It's only going to hurt. But it was a campaign promise by the Biden administration. He did promise, and he got a lot of pressure from the progressive wing of his party that they should be doing this. In fact, the president will be making the announcement in a few minutes. When it happens, I'll try to grab the audio and actually share with you what he said. But earlier today, he announced that he's going to be pardoning student loans. It's something everybody's been looking at for a long time, looking at both sides of the issue. If you went to school with Pell Grants, you'll be getting a $20,000 reduction. So if you didn't get the grants, then you're going to be getting $10,000 in reduction. The forgiveness, though, only applies, as you heard in that news clip, to you if you make less than $125,000 a year. So that's a lot of people. Maggie, look up, or Patrick, what's the average income in the country? Is it $66,000, $67,000, or is it even less? Is it $47,000? I can't remember. But, you know, that's almost double the average income in the country. So I think it's going to blanket a lot of people. He's also going to extend the pause. Maggie's telling me the average income, really nationally, she's just said in my head that the average income for the country is $32,000. $32,000. I always thought it was just a little bit higher. One report I thought I saw was 47. Another one I thought I saw recently was 66. But yeah, it makes sense if you take a look at those who make a lot of money and those who make a little. But the point is, you get it, right? Even if it was as high as 66, that's twice the average income. So it's a pretty big net that's being thrown. I have no problem with him extending the pause on repayment for people who right now are coming out of the pandemic or just trying to get back on their feet to make those payments back. He has put an income cap on the repayment amount. So the maximum repayment will be 5% of your monthly income. But he might get some pushback from his own party on that. The House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, said last year that the president can't forgive student loan debt. Only Congress can. So we will see how all this shakes out. In fact, tomorrow, I'm not going to do it today. Tomorrow, let's look at it. And I'd love to hear your story and how you feel about it. Tomorrow, maybe around this time, first segment or so of my show, I'm going to break down all that you need to know when it comes to student loans. So if you have a child or somebody just graduated college, you're carrying debt, we'll take a look at what it means, how it's going to be distributed, what's coming. What's coming ahead? Will it actually become a reality? So that's the latest. Big news. When we get his audio, I will play that for you. Good afternoon. Let me welcome you. I'm Drew Mariani. It's so good to hang out with you today. We're going to pray the chaplet in about 50 minutes, so make sure you let others know, all right? Have them join us for what I think is just an extraordinarily powerful time of prayer. Before I get into some of the other issues, because there's a big news update I want to get into for you here, too, I want to put a plug in. Tomorrow, I'm going to be joined by Peter Atkinson, one of our colleagues here at Relevant Radio. This guy is really talented. I say it a lot. When I first got into television production, one of my mentors, somebody who really taught me a lot, he says, quality begets quality. You know, use the best talent you can get, use the best production facilities, use the best cameras, and in the end, that will translate. You know, there's something different about somebody who does that versus somebody who doesn't. And it's really true. You know, your one job will get you your next because it really stands out amongst all the rest. Peter's one of those guys. I think he's an extraordinary talent. When I listen to his audio, it's extraordinarily done. And I'm really excited to get plugged into On the Night Train. This is a audio drama. It's going to debut in September. And I know podcasts are huge right now. You know, you might take long walks. You might drive to work. I don't know. You might do housework, you know, while you're listening to a podcast. This is kind of fun. Relevant Radio has this entertainment division, and the Merry Beggars have come up with this new audio drama. And I think it'd be fun to listen to. It's called On the Night Train. You can actually, if you want to check it out a little bit earlier, maybe I'll play a clip for you a little bit later. There's a trailer that's out. You can hear some of the quality that's in it. But I hope you will check it out. You can sign up for this and just subscribe, and you're going to get all the episodes free. You're going to get them all free. So sign up for free at onthenighttrain.com. That's onthenighttrain.com. That way you won't miss any of the episodes. And you're saying, well, what's it all about? It's kind of an interesting little concept where it's a period piece. It goes back to 1879, and the kids of Edith and Paul Mallard, they're not going to miss it when mysterious accidents begin to overtake their dad's night train. It's up to them to solve the mystery, save the train before it's too late. It's a family type of entertainment for you. So the kids maybe want to do it at night. Maybe say, you know what, we're going to unplug. We're going to shut off the phones. We're going to close the tablets and the computers. We're going to turn off the TV. Let's listen to this. You know, it might be a cool little opportunity to bond with the family. And you can tune in every night for On the Night Train. Audio mystery for the entire family. All right, so keep an eye out for Peter. Will break it all down for you tomorrow. He's going to be stopping by the studio right after the chaplet. Hey, I've got a little bit of a follow-up for you on a story we covered yesterday. You know, I've been covering a lot as to trying to get you aware of the scope, the gravity, the magnitude, the spectrum of persecution that's happening around the planet. Because, I say you got to be careful here in the States. I cherish every one of our liberties. But I really do, I am concerned about this animus towards God. The people of Nicaragua, they have been suffering terribly. You might remember Nicaraguan government president Daniel Ortega. He's been arresting, detaining church leaders. He's been canceling Catholic events. He's been shutting down religious radio stations. Here's an overview from NBC of what's now unfolding in that country. Listen.
In Nicaragua, President Daniel Ortega is taking aim at a new adversary. The Catholic Church. For 2 weeks now, police have surrounded the house of Bishop Rolando José Álvarez, held under house arrest, accused of conspiracy against the government. It's the latest crackdown by the Ortega regime, as its relationship with the Catholic Church deteriorates. This week, another priest was arrested in the northern part of the country, just hours after the government banned religious processions, citing security concerns. So far, 7 Catholic radio stations have been taken off the air, many of them led by Bishop Álvarez. Earlier this month, when Ortega expelled 18 nuns from Nicaragua, deeming them a threat and accusing their organization of breaking the country's strict laws on nonprofits. The crackdown, seen by many as punishment to those accused of opposing Ortega's authoritarian government and his own bias towards the Catholic Church, which many say is rooted to peace talks in 2018, when the Catholic Church tried to mediate talks between anti-Ortega protesters and the Nicaraguan government, caught in the middle of this conflict. Believers continue praying for a peaceful resolution and even divine intervention.
Yeah, I love that. You know, dictators never last. They're never sustained. They ultimately fall. This desire, this lust for power, control, it just destroys. And same thing will happen with Ortega. I just think that's such a great story, though. Hundreds of the faithful Catholics and clergy of the Diocese of Lyon, they said, no way, Ortega. You know, they gathered together on Sunday, on God's Day, and had this beautiful procession of the image of Our Lady of Mercy. That's who went through the streets. The image of Our Lady of Mercy was, you know, processed. She's the patroness, you know, coincidentally, of that diocese. And again, this just comes at a time when this dictator, Ortega, is clamping down on church freedom. We talked yesterday about him arresting a bishop in the middle of the night, imprisoning him 80 miles away from his home. This is tyranny. That's what we are seeing here. You know, you heard at the end of that clip, the woman make the comment, you know, maybe we need divine intervention. Maybe they need divine intervention. I remember in Manila, the same thing happened in the streets. I think it was during the Marcos regime. And the faithful went out, and Marcos sent out troops and tanks to dispel the crowds and even ordered them to fire on the people that were there in the Philippines. And the people took their rosaries in hand, and they invoked the Mother of God, and they prayed and they prayed. And Cardinal Sin, he reported on this as well as others. Many eyewitnesses, the faithful there, even the soldiers in these tanks, they refused to fire on the people because they saw a towering image of the Mother of God. Our Lady appeared to protect her children. So you talk about divine intervention. It happens all the time. You know, prayer's powerful. God always conquers. He's all your. If you're on the side of God, you got victory on your side. So in the end, we're going to win this. We're going to win this war against tyranny, against atheism, against this dictatorship of relativism, against this culture of death. We're in the battle. Just got to stay firm. You know, tomorrow, three states have new laws protecting unborn human life, and they have these trigger laws that are going to take place in Idaho and Tennessee and Texas, and that'll make, I think by my last count, was about a dozen states that now have laws protecting the unborn. And that is great news. That since the Dobbs decision was handed down on June 24th, which overturned Roe v. Wade. But SBA Pro-Life America, they estimate this is going to save about, check this number out, 69,000 unborn babies from slaughter. Also in Texas, a federal judge has ruled that a law that requires hospitals to receive federal funds to provide appropriate medical care in the emergency room does not include abortion. Bravo, right? Because that was kind of a little loophole. The Department of Health and Human Services issued a ruling saying that law overrides any state laws forbidding abortions, but the judge has initially ruled against the HHS, so we'll see what happens. And then one final story here, and we'll talk a little bit about what the UN is doing coming up, because I want to put this on your radar as well. I want to share with you also what Seth Rogen had to say, what Bishop Barron. It's going to be a great hour. I hope you'll stay with me. New York Times, they raised a question, and I'll ask you, is a fetus a person? Right? Those who are pro-life, of course, say yes. But let me share their headline, okay? Is a fetus a person, ? An anti-abortion strategy says yes, end of quote. You notice the words, an anti-abortion strategy? Then there's this subhead. Fetal personhood, which confers legal rights from conception, is an effort to push beyond abortion bans and classify the procedure as murder. In Georgia, it also means a $3,000 tax credit. Here's a tip for you. Okay, New York Times, shame on you. Maybe you should have been talking to pro-lifers starting back in the early 1970s. If you had, you would have known that the pro-life movement has always, always, always believed in the personhood of the unborn human person. You know, even the newly started embryo, it's only been necessary political strategy that has kept us from emphasizing that. So, yes, New York, New York Times, I should say. I'm not going to say that about New York. Abortion is murder, although Governor Hochul and that state tends to really champion this culture of death. That's really quite unfortunate. I want to share with you a little bit about what's happening as well, because our nation is trying to export this woundedness. The Supreme Court, of course, hands down the Dobbs decision, overturns Roe, right? The Biden administration set up a surrogate to the United Nations to assure a key committee that the administration is committed to keeping abortion as accessible as possible. And of course, there's no need to do that because it's none of the UN's business, right? What the laws of our country what laws our country passes that protect human life. It's not their business. But the European Union, along with the Biden administration, now are attempting to force the UN General Assembly to adopt a resolution that claims abortion is, get this, a human right. Here's a little bit more from EWTN. Listen.
The United Nations is considering a measure that would call abortion, quote, a human right. Delegates are in the final phases of discussions. The resolution would declare access to safe abortion as a policy that all governments should pursue. The measure has a support from the Biden administration and most of the large European Union nations. A final vote is expected by the end of the month.
So delegates right now are in the final phase of negotiating, you know, a General Assembly resolution that declares access to safe abortion as a policy that the government should pursue to so-called, quote, and I'll quote them, ensure the promotion and protection of human rights of all women and their sexual and reproductive health. So, look, there have been a lot of repeated objections from countries that protect the life of children in the womb or they have, let's say, restrictive abortion laws. The resolution, just to give you perspective on this, it's being considered with this new controversial language for adoption by the end of the month. So I invite you to pray that it does not pass. But I've invited today to give us a better perspective on this, a deeper understanding of really what this portends. I have invited Steve Stefano Generini, who's Vice President of Legal Studies at the Center for Family and Human Rights. They monitor what's going on at the UN, and he joins me today. You can find more about what they're doing, too, at c-fam.org. Hey, Stefano, good to have you with me today.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
So, crazy story. What does it look like right now in terms of the possibility of this resolution passing? What are you hearing on the ground there? What do you think is going to unfold?
It's very unlikely that this resolution will not pass. The most important thing at this point is that it will pass only with qualified support, and that some delegations are willing to vote against the resolution. As you can imagine, there's a lot of pressure from the powerful countries, the ones with all the money, including the United States government and governments from Europe. There's a lot of pressure from them to make this resolution pass. So smaller countries with a lot less leverage, it's going to be a tall order for them to actually oppose a resolution. And so that's something to pray for sure.
So help me understand this. If it passes, and as you point out, it's more than likely going to do that, what kind of binding authority does it have on the member states, or member nations, I should say?
So it's actually not binding on the member states, but it is binding. It is binding on the UN system, which administers over $25 billion of development assistance and over $15 billion of emergency humanitarian peace assistance also. So it's going to have an impact, this resolution, especially on humanitarian operators, as well as the UN agencies, providing UN agencies with a mandate to promote abortion as a human right. Now, you can think, oh, well, UN agencies, you know, well, they won't have much of a say here in the United States. Well, probably not, but they will have a much bigger say in smaller countries that are really dependent on international assistance.
Yeah, so if it passes, of course, the United States can simply ignore it. What I think about is how we export this type of woundedness, this dysfunction. What about third world countries that say, you know, we need aid from the UN, and we need aid from countries like the U.S.? Are they under some sort of pressure, you know, to conform so that the aid will continue to flow, or won't that really matter?
Without a doubt, and that's why this resolution is likely to pass, because of that pressure. You know, it's all these smaller countries or developing countries who are dependent on international assistance. They don't feel that they can, you know, come one day to the United States government or the government of Germany and France with hand outstretched asking for a favor, and then the next day, you know, sort of slap them down in the General Assembly when they propose access to safe abortion as a human right. So that's the tension there, and there's a lot of pressure from the U.S. ambassador at the United Nations, as well as the State Department, and probably the White House too, calling capitals all around the world, telling them, do not oppose this resolution.
Hey, give me your take on just the White House itself. I mean, what's with this agenda? Why are they so rabidly pro-death? I mean, why is this so important to promulgate globally?
Well, I mean, I can give you both a bureaucratic answer as well as an ideological one. So on the level of ideology, abortion is very much the sacrament of sexual autonomy. Yep. And it sort of symbolizes complete control over your body, that nobody can interfere in what you want to do with your body. And even though it's irrational, of course, because there's another body involved, the body of the baby.
Right.
On the other hand, at a bureaucratic level, you could say this is another way to bypass the American people and people of countries all around the world, because if abortion becomes recognized as an international right, and if UN agencies promote it as an international right, then it doesn't matter what the state legislatures want to do here in the United States. It doesn't matter what any country in the world, in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, want to do with regards to abortion, because it's already been declared an international right. So courts all around the world, activist judges all around the world, activist executive branches all around the world will be able to promote abortion as a human right.
Just a final thought from Stefano, if I can. I mean, could action be brought to the world court if this resolution's passed and enough nations are disenchanted with it?
Well, it's funny that you should ask that, because the Biden administration has just nominated Sarah Cleveland, who is a radical pro-abortion lawyer, to fill a vacancy of the International Court of Justice. And if the International Court of Justice were to be asked if abortion is an international right by a UN agency, the International Court of Justice could give an advisory opinion that it actually is.
Wow. You know, it's just evil. Bottom line, it's just downright evil. Hey, I want to thank you for what you guys do there at the Center for Family and Human Rights. Wonderful work, and I'm grateful for you joining me today. If people want more information, they want to support the work or read or get plugged into what's happening here. I know a lot of people are disconnected from this. It's not often reported on a national scale. What's the best way to get connected?
You can go to our website, c-fam.org, and you can sign up for the Friday Facts, which is our weekly newsletter with where we publicize stories on what's happening on the social issues at the United Nations.
Awesome stuff. Hey, thank you, Stefano. I really appreciate your time today.
It's good thank to you, have Drew. You with us.
God bless you. That's Stefano Generini. He is, as I said, the Vice President for Legal Studies at the Center for Family and Human Rights. Sign up for their Friday Facts. All right, sign up for it. c-fam.org. You know, he hit on something really important. He talks about what this administration is currently doing. I mean, they're definitely positioning justices, judges, all these different things they'd like to do. When I come back, Bishop Robert Barron actually addressed the behavior of President Biden. I don't know if you heard this or not. I want to share some audio with you from Bishop Barron, and we'll take a look at really what is, without question, and politics aside, I'm just talking as a Catholic, as a man who values, respects, and upholds the dignity of the human person at all stages, regardless of you know, how healthy they are, what color they are, what race they are. Biden has the whole administration, in particular Joe here too, they are advancing, pushing, promoting an undeniable abortion extremism. And at the very heart of this, and I'll say it because I really believe it, it's evil. Stay with me. When we come back, you'll hear Bishop Barron. I'll break some of this down and more.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
You can't be a half saint, be a whole saint, or nothing at all. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. You know, some of the greatest saints started as the most wretched of sinners. Pray for me. I'm a wretched sinner, right? Let's pray for Maggie saying me too. We all are. I mean, we're so unworthy. I prayed today when I was at Mass just for the grace to grow in holiness. That's the most important thing we can do on this side of the veil. And we will be glad we did when we get to meet God face to face. We also have to pray for our brother and our sister in the Lord, especially those who we know are really publicly dissenting and who we know are on the path to hell. Now, God's merciful. I can't judge any man's soul. But I certainly have great reservation and concern about people who proclaim to be a Catholic, and then they obstinately persist in what is a manifest grave evil. And they advance evil. They advance this culture of death. And I feel like I've been talking about, ever since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, it seems like we've been talking a lot about abortion. But I just want to put into perspective what's happening right now. The battle is raging right now. It is raging. Satan is furious over the fall of Roe. Furious over it and what it means. Lives are going to be saved, as I just shared. We need to pray for our darn president and this administration. And I mean that with love. We need to pray for him. His immortal soul is in the balance. You've heard me, I'm sure you've heard others on this network, rail many times against what the administration's doing. They're overt and just blatant support of abortion. Several bishops have spoken out against his position. The problem that the president faces is that he used to be pro-life. He understands this. You know, he has children. You know what life is. His party ended up changing, right? His position then changed. And now all of a sudden you see a man who once stood for life, who understood it to be human life, is now fully in favor of abortion and without limits. Without limits. So he claims to be Catholic. That's a serious problem. So I say pray for him. I prayed for him today. I prayed for a lot of other world leaders. One of the most prominent bishops has recently spoken out on this, Bishop Robert Barron. As I shared with you a couple weeks ago, he's now the bishop of Winona, Rochester, in Minnesota. And Bishop Barron is really he reminds me of a Fulton Sheen. He's very savvy when it comes to television. He did a wonderful series on our Catholic faith, and he's been using the media in a powerful way. And I think he's one of the most gifted communicators I have a chance to listen to in the Catholic world. He just has an anointed way of preaching. But that's also the charism of so many of these bishops, right? To be able to teach the faith and to spread it. He made a short video rebuking the president, right? Especially on two points. The whole idea that he does not want to impose his belief. And that's what the president's saying. Oh, I don't want to impose my beliefs on others. You know, this is what the constituents want, or this is what the party wants, or this, whatever the excuse is, right? If you privately believe abortion is wrong and yet you publicly support it, then you have a real problem. Let me share with you some of the incredible insight from none other than Bishop Robert Barron.
On numerous occasions throughout his public career, President Biden has asserted his personal belief as a Catholic that human life begins at conception and that, therefore, abortion is morally wrong. Now, he's always been quick to add he's unwilling to use the law to impose this personal conviction on anyone else. He presumably feels that since this understanding of human life is a function of uniquely Catholic doctrine or dogma, it would be as objectionable to require everyone to accept it as it would to require all Americans to assent to the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception or to the Articles of the Nicene Creed. But everybody, this is so much nonsense. Opposition to abortion is not a matter of doctrine in the strict sense of the term, but rather a conclusion drawn from moral reasoning and from the findings of objective science. It's an indisputable fact that human life, which is to say a living human being with a distinctive genetic structure and identity, comes into existence at the moment of conception. It's furthermore a fundamental axiom of ethics that innocent human life ought never to be attacked. These insights and principles are the foundation of an argument against abortion that can and should be made in the public forum. They are decidedly not a matter of dogma peculiar to Catholicism. Now, I fully understand that people might disagree with the line of reasoning I propose. Fine. Let's argue the matter in the public forum and see which of us can garner majority support. But please don't tell me that I'm imposing a dogma on you. While I'm at it, may I say, I am mightily tired of the way the president and his allies use the term impose. Time and again, they say some version of I'm unwilling to impose my beliefs on others. Now that we've established that opposition to abortion is not a matter of sectarian doctrine, can we also admit that any law, by its very nature, imposes on others? If a majority of federal representatives formulate a piece of legislation to set the speed limit at 65, if the executive agrees with this determination, a law would go into effect imposing this viewpoint on the entire society. The same goes for tax codes, antitrust regulations, minimum wage requirements, civil rights statutes, et cetera, et cetera. Laws don't suggest. They impose. That's their nature. And behind every truly just law, there's some moral principle. Preserving life, establishing greater justice, protecting the poor, fostering the common good, etc. So if you were to ask me whether I was working to impose on the entire society a law that would protect the rights of the unborn, I would say yes. And then I would add, and what's your point? And finally, can we please put pay to the silly position first articulated by Governor Mario Cuomo 35 years ago, and then tiresomely repeated by far too many Catholic politicians ever since, that, quote, "I'm personally opposed to abortion, but publicly I support it," close quote. Again, one might make such a distinction in regard to a strictly doctrinal matter, arguing, for instance, you know, "I personally believe it's indispensable to attend Mass every Sunday, but I would never dream of sponsoring legislation to that effect." Fine. However, since opposition to abortion, as we've just showed, is not a conviction born of dogma, but rather of moral reasoning, it's utterly incoherent to claim that one can hold the position privately but not defend it publicly. That would be precisely analogous to someone in the 19th century saying that though he personally finds slavery abhorrent, he'll do nothing to eliminate it or even to stop its spread. It would also be precisely analogous to someone in the mid-20th century saying that, you know, though his personal conviction is that Jim Crow laws are morally repugnant, he will fight publicly to keep them in place. In light of this, can you see why so many Catholics, including your humble scribe here, find the president's statements and actions in regard to abortion so repellent? He claims he objects to abortion, that he considers it morally wrong, and yet, time and again, in the most straightforward, even strenuous manner, he strives, by word and deed, to make it more available, more acceptable, more legally defended. In the 19th century, the viscerally anti-slavery Abraham Lincoln did not pursue the extreme anti-slavery policy advocated by the abolitionists. Rather, he took a more moderate position, endeavoring to hem slavery in, to limit its spread in the hopes that he was setting it on the course for extinction. This was, for the 16th president, a matter of prudential political judgment. Now, if our current president, convinced as he claims to be that abortion is wrong, were to take steps in the direction of at least curtailing the practice, or if he could have found positive words to say about the Dobbs decision that at least gives individual states the right to restrict abortion, I might see him then in the mold of Lincoln. But instead, he presses forward, advocating the most radical pro-abortion policy imaginable, seeking to codify into law the Roe v. Wade and Casey decisions that essentially made abortion, up to the moment of birth, a matter of legal impunity in our country. Now, I believe this is precisely why Pope Francis recently referred to the president's position on abortion as incoherent. President Biden speaks often of his Catholic faith, attends Mass regularly, and prays the rosary. I applaud him for all that. I no reason whatsoever to doubt the sincerity of his Catholicism. But I am sorry to say that in regard to the most pressing moral issue of our time, he stands athwart both the teaching of the church and right reason.
That, of course, was Bishop Robert Barron. And, you know, again, let's pray for Joe Biden. Second Catholic president in our U.S. history. I wish I could be behind the mic and just sing his praises for his defense of life, for the Supreme Court nominees, for all the things he can do to advance the common good, advance those moral principles that will make our republic here successful. But unfortunately, the day that Roe v. Wade was overturned, he says this, and I'll just quote him, "I call on everyone, no matter how deeply they care about this decision, you know, to keep protests peaceful, peaceful, peaceful. No intimidation, no violence is acceptable," he says, right? He calls upon that. And what do we see? His Attorney General Merrick Garland has shown no interest at all in enforcing the law. What are we seeing after Dobbs fell? We saw desecration of places of worship, of Catholic churches, of pro-life pregnancy centers that have been in tremendous, you know, have just been a wonderful blessing to women who have had unexpected pregnancies, have been vandalized and firebombed. Groups like Ruth Senas and Jane's Revenge have taken credits for this. Where's the FBI on that? Why hasn't there been an arrest? Why hasn't his attorney general done something? As president, he should put them definitely on that. We know his history, you know, in terms of reversing the Mexico City policy a week into his presidency. That prohibits federal funding to foreign nonprofits and NGOs who perform abortion. It's a very pro-death move. The 6-3 conservative majority of the Supreme Court, you know, Biden knew that pro-life legislation and that Roe v. Wade was going to be challenged. What did he want to do? He was advocating for ending the filibuster, right? That's what he was advocating. Thank God it didn't happen. He wanted to stack the Supreme Court in order to advance this pro-death agenda. He attacked the Hyde Amendment, you know, which for more than 40 years has enjoyed broad partisan support. And if you're not familiar with that, that amendment prohibits the federal funding of abortion, except for a few very rare cases. And of course, he's flip-flopped on that in the past. But yeah, look, it goes on and on and on. He rescinded a Trump-era conscience rule protecting health workers from forced participation in abortion and transgender surgery, all of these things. And I won't give you the litany of things. I want to applaud Bishop Barron for the clarity of what he had to say. And I also want to thank, you know, another wonderful bishop who has done the same thing, who has come out. Bishop William Laurie of Baltimore, head of the USCCB's Committee on Pro-Life Activity, said this. He says, it's just deeply disturbing and tragic that the president is choosing instead to use his power as president of the United States to promote and to facilitate abortion in our country, seeking every possible avenue to deny unborn children their most basic human and civil rights and the right to life. You know, and I could not agree more. And I just want to thank these bishops who are speaking out. Let's pray for all the bishops. You know, Bishop Barron quoted Pope Francis, where he said, let Biden talk to his pastor about that incoherence of being Catholic and promoting abortion, because clearly there's a disconnect there. And I don't want it to be partisan. I don't want it to be hateful. I don't want it to create a divide. I think this man is straight from the path. I think he's lost his way. And I think as our brother in Christ, we need to pray for him. God's given him a tremendous platform, an incredible authority, and he could use those gifts that God entrusted him with to really to do good, to protect life and advance the common good. Instead, we're seeing quite the opposite. And look, there's consequences. You will stand before God just as I will. And we'll be evaluated. We'll be judged on the gifts that we've been given, the providence we've been given, the opportunities we've been given in the light of God's perfect justice. And I pray for his mercy at that moment in time. And you will see the opportunities you had to serve God and to do what's right, as well as all the times that we failed. And I just pray that in the end, the weight of that balance opens the doors to eternity for all of us. Hey, when we come back, it's not just bishops in the church that are talking about this. I don't know if you have a chance to listen to Joe Rogan at all. There was an article that came across my radar. He had an interview with Seth Dillon. And when we come back, great exchange, because some people say, Drew, I'm with you. I'm against abortion, you know, except, you know, if my daughter was raped, you know, I couldn't have her, you know, carry that rapist child, or, you know, if it was incest or something else, we just, you know, there's certain exceptions, life of the mother. When we come back, I want to share just a short little snippet from Joe Rogan, a conversation with Seth Dillon. He's the CEO of the Babylon Bee. And some of these questions came up. I think you're going to find the answers quite revealing. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in about 12 minutes or so, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Let's pray for our country. Let's pray for our leaders. Let's pray for each other in this walk that we call life. You know, one day this is all behind us, the sufferings, the confusion, the attacks from the evil one, really. He's our enemy. And life, I really have always seen as a great test, you know, a test of faith and of love and of mercy and of joy, a test for God, choosing God, you know, and Satan's the enemy. He doesn't want you to be with him. He wants to rob you of that eternity. So let's pray when we come back for our temporal and our spiritual needs. There's some good news, potentially, and people are very divided over this, and tomorrow I'm going to dive into this issue in much greater detail, looking at the pros and cons of it, but big, big news today. President Biden is going to forgive up to $20,000 in federal student loan debt for tens of millions of Americans. And this is a move that the White House is saying is going to provide just unprecedented relief for borrowers. Of course, there'll be pushback. There will be legal challenges, I bet, to this. We'll see how it all plays out. But right now, here's what's being thrown on the table. This follows, just to give you some perspective on what's happening here. It's been over a year of internal debate, right? The progressives of his party have been pushing him to forgive as much as $50,000 of debt. Some even want everybody's student debt to be forgiven, right? A lot of people are saying, hey, any of the debt forgiveness is just going to throw gasoline on the inflation fire that is raging right now. So he announced today, and I want to play some audio from him, that he's going to cancel $10,000 in federal student loan debt for borrowers that earn up to about $125,000 a year. If you're married, couples who make less than $250,000 in a year, you're eligible for that. And if you happen to receive federal Pell grants and you make less than $125,000 a year, you're eligible for that $20,000 of forgiveness. Here's a little bit of what the president had to say just moments ago.
I made a commitment that would provide student debt relief. And I'm honoring that commitment today. Using the authority Congress granted the Department of Education, we will forgive $10,000 in outstanding federal student loans. In addition, students who come from low-income families, which allowed them to qualify to receive a Pell Grant, will have their debt reduced $20,000. Both of these targeted actions are for families who need it the most. Working and middle-class people hit especially hard during the pandemic, making under $125,000 a year. You make more than that, you don't qualify. No high-income individual or high-income household on top of the 5%, in the top 5% of incomes, by the way, will benefit from this action period. In fact, about 90% of the eligible beneficiaries make under $75,000 a family. Here's what that means. If you make under $125,000, you get $10,000 knocked off your student debt. If you make under $125,000 a year and you received a Pell Grant, you'll get an additional $10,000 knocked off that total, for a total of $20,000 relief. 95% of the borrowers can benefit from these actions. That's 43 million people.
So he goes on, look, tomorrow, if you join me in the very first hour, join me for my show tomorrow, I'm going to give you a total breakdown of what this means, how likely it is to become a reality, what kind of legal challenges it may face, as well as, you know, how it gets distributed, how your loans ultimately get reduced and paid off. And we could talk about whether or not it's fair. I was just checking my email here before the chaplet, and I saw an email come in from one listener. Let me see if I can get to it while I talk, see if I can multitask here with you. And the woman said this. She said, and Liz, thank you for sharing this. She says, look, we sacrifice to pay off student loans. We watch as someone we know goes out to eat often. They live far more extravagantly than we do, a much more extravagant life, and not consistently pay their loan. Now they want us to pay it off for them through taxes. That's not fair. We have to scrimp and pinch as it is. Well, I appreciate you sharing. I know there's a lot of people are saying, look, I don't know where this is going to shake out. Independent estimates suggest that the plan is going to cost about $300 billion over 10 years. $300 billion over 10 years. So in the end, everyone's going to be paying for it. You might get some temporary relief if you're in that window of people who get loan relief. But, boy, the action's going to add to the federal deficit. Everyone is saying that. It's going to add to it over time since borrowers repay less or maybe none of their loans to the federal government. But it doesn't involve, you know, an immediate outlay of federal funds. But, again, the forgiveness of these loans, they apply to students with federal loans from undergraduate and graduate programs. I also believe, I'm going to check into this, I'm not sure if this is the case, if you're a parent that has a Parent PLUS loan, this may apply to you as well. So we'll take a look at it. Also, the other bit of news for everyone carrying student loan debts right now, Mr. Biden also announced an extension of the pandemic pause on student loans through the end of the year. So you got a little bit of time, all right? You got a little bit of time. I want to share with you one other little bit of audio, if I could, with you, getting back to what we've been talking about in the first hour, the logic behind what we're seeing here when it comes to life. Certain politicians saying, hey, I personally am opposed to it, but my constituents want me to vote this way, therefore I do. There was a great exchange. Maggie had heard part of this. I had read a piece where the Babylon Bee CEO, Seth Dillon, he appeared on Joe Rogan's podcast, and they were discussing a variety of issues. And during what was a three-hour podcast, Rogan brought up the issue of abortion, in particular to rape. So I want to share just part of this exchange. Very, very telling. I want to commend, in a special way, Seth Dillon for standing his ground and for his rationality. Here's part of the exchange.
And this idea that you can't have someone who is a Christian who talks to another person who's a Christian, and maybe they were on the fence about something, and you convince them to have a child, and it's the best decision they have ever made in their life, and they love their kids so much, they couldn't imagine they were thinking about getting an abortion. Right. That's real, too.
Yeah.
That's real, too. There's also women who have been raped who should not have to carry some rapist baby. There's women who have been sexually assaulted before the age of 14.
Hold on. Okay.
That's real too. And we all have to agree. We have to agree on both of those things.
There are also, though, I'm not going to argue with you on that point, but I will say there are people who have been born of rape and are alive right now and are pro-life. And they go around speaking, talking about how I had a right to live. And they will go out there and make an argument, a pro-life case. And they're born of a rape.
You don't have a right to tell a 14-year-old girl she has to carry a rapist baby.
I'm just saying that's real too. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying, if a 14-year-old child gets raped, you say that they have to carry that baby?
I don't think two wrongs make a right. I don't think murder fixes a rape.
I perfect way of saying it, right? I mean, you look at it in that context, it certainly makes a difference. In the next clip I want to share with you, Rogan asked Seth to clarify what he thinks happens at the moment of conception, and actually calls it miraculous without any qualms. Listen.
The same question is if someone knows they're pregnant or if they test positive for pregnancy and they take a pill that can get rid of that, like the day of, you're against that.
I would lay it out like this. I would say it is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human life. Abortion intentionally kills an innocent human life. Therefore, abortion is wrong. And I don't think any of the examples of how developed is it? You know, can it think? Is it conscious? Can it dream? Can it feel pain?
So for you, it's the moment of conception.
I think that if it's a human life, a distinct human life, then I think it's wrong to end its life.
Once the conception happens, there's some sort of a miraculous event, like at the very moment, like you could literally get to the point where the sperm cracks the egg. If you could scoop that egg out right there, would that be abortion?
Well, I mean, at some point you're going to have to say there was a magic moment that happened because you believe that we eventually become valuable humans, right?
Well, listen,
where's the moment where you think the magic happens?
I love that. Yeah, Seth went on to say, when we start talking about harmful misinformation and types of things that are considered I say that, or we tweet, or jokes were made, you know, that are considered harmful information. He says this, and let me quote him right here. I love this. He says, what about calling a baby a clump of cells? Right? I think it's harmful misinformation because then you are encouraging people to kill it like it's nothing. And it's actually human life. It's developed human life. I think abortion is health care the way rape is lovemaking. That's what he says. I think abortion is to health care the way rape is lovemaking. And, of course, that's a horrible thing to even hear. But you can see the reality there, right? That's exactly what abortion is. It's not health care. And rape is not lovemaking, right? So, I want to commend Seth Dillon. There's much more to that conversation on what he had to say. And in the end, Rogan, I think, comes around a little bit in that part of that conversation. But great exchange. I think we need more of it in the public square. I think we need to talk these things out. I think truth ultimately will help win an argument. You don't have to get angry. You don't have to insult. You just got to throw out the facts, right? In the end, life will win. In the end, goodness wins. Let's ask for God's mercy now on our country. We need it, on our leaders. And let's ask for God's mercy on you and all your needs. We'll do that when I return.